Your life is going to be defined by one thing, whether you're worth a damn. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, when I was first starting out, I was around 19 years old, and I was in Mississippi with two of my mentors. One was one of the wealthiest men in Mississippi. He was in his 90s or late 80s, and another was one of the wealthiest men in Europe named Michael. And Michael was in a truck with him driving through a ranch farm, and I was talking to him about this book I had just read and this author and how much I liked this author. And Michael just turned to me and said, "But is he worth a damn?" And I didn't know what he meant at that point in my life. You know, this guy had written a book, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, what do you mean, is he worth a damn? This person has a diploma. This person has the outer trappings of success. And over the years, I've often pondered what Michael meant by that. And the wealthiest man in the world said these words: "Good people are so scarce that they jump out at you." I didn't realize that when I was at school. It is astounding to me how many people sleepwalk through life. But then there are others who jump out at you and do extraordinary things. That's another way to put what it means to be worth a damn. Somebody who is not sleepwalking through life. For you to make it, for you to rise above the pack, for you to be successful, you will have to be worth a damn. And trust me, you're going to run into, and you probably know a lot of people, who outwardly seem like they're worth a damn, but they're not. They're not. And if the wealthiest man in the world met those people that you're thinking of, they wouldn't stand out to them. What makes you stand out? Is it, you know, a bachelor's degree, grad degree, a PhD? No. No, 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 no. You know, when I was young, I went to college for one semester and I dropped out. And I was talking to Alan Nation, who was at that time was one of my main mentors. And I was telling him, I'm thinking of going to college. And at that time, I'd already started a business. And he said, "Ty, why do you want to go to college?" And I said, "Oh, well, then people respect you." And I'll never forget what he said back to me. He looked at me and he said, "No, this is America. Make $1 million. Then people will respect you." And I never forgot that either. And that's true. This country is full of people with outward trappings. Now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with a college degree. If you're using a college degree to be part of the small group of people who's worth a damn, then my hat's off to you. But if you're using a college degree as an outward symbol, forget outward symbol. Being worth a damn means from the inside out. You're not from the outside in. Now, this is all kind of broad, you know, generalizations. What does it really mean to be worth a damn? If I had to sum it up in one word, I would say it's awareness. As I said, I did the quote from the wealthiest man in the world. People who are amazing are so rare that it boggles your mind. They're so scarce they will jump out at you. And on your way to success, if you can make yourself worth a damn, and let's just pretend there's a 1 to 10 scale of worth a damn. 1 is somebody that we all know. It's like they're not even living. They're not curious. They're not aware that's they're not asking questions. You ask them, you know, "What do you think of this, this?" They don't even have an opinion. They just put their head forward. They go do their job. They make money enough to, you know, eat, sleep. They watch TV and they go to bed. Those are people that aren't worth a damn. That's a 1. And a 10 is somebody like, let's say, a Bill Gates. A man who not only has built an empire, but has love in his life with a healthy relationship with his wife. Obviously, an incredible amount of money. He's physically healthy. He has higher purpose spiritually. He's changing the world. I mean, this is a man who's almost eradicating malaria. What is it about that guy? I mean, he didn't go to college. He dropped out of college. What were the factors that made him worth a damn? Well, Here's an interesting litmus test. I've talked about this before, but it's worth repeating. Pretend you're in high school, and you have to bet on the fellow student that you think will go the furthest. Who's it going to be? Is it the person who gets the best grades? Drives the best car? Best looking? No. It's the kid that deep down you know is worth a damn. It's the person who's alive. So if you're listening to this, and you're anything but an 8, 9, or 10 in being worth a damn, and don't ever estimate yourself. One of the cognitive biases that all of us humans have is excessive self-regard. The average person, 70% of people think they're above average, which is not possible. We tend to overestimate ourselves. Be honest with yourself. Compare yourself to amazing people. Don't compare yourself. What most people do is if you say to them, are you smart? They compare themselves to the friends that they know that are stupider than them. And they're like, oh yeah, I'm a really smart person. Well, compared to who? I mean, I ask myself, am I smart? I mean, I have a high IQ. I'm in Mensa. But Stephen Hawking, I read his books. This is a man whose intellect dwarfs me. On a 1 to 10 scale, I may be a 0 or a negative 10, and he's a 10. So when you talk about worth a damn, people who are worth a damn are people who are aware of life. They have command of all the areas in their life. They have physical command over their body. They have command over their finances. They have command over their friends, family, and romantic life. They have command over their higher purpose. They're aware of it, and if they may not have achieved it all now, but they know what they want, and they're going towards it. That's what it means to be worth a damn. All the outward things, like where you're like, well, I got this car, and I went to this school, those only count on the worth a damn scale if they're moving you toward a specific goal. If they're just there to show off, doesn't matter. Out of the Forbes 20 wealthiest people in the world, I looked a few years ago. I haven't looked this specific year, but 2 or 3 years ago, out of the 20 wealthiest people in the world, 17 of them had not gone to college or they had dropped out of college. 2 of them had not even completed high school. I think only one of them had a higher college degree. Think of that. 2 of them didn't even finish high school. Now, does that mean I'm anti-high school? Obviously not. High school is a neutral tool. College is a neutral tool. Just sleepwalking through college. I mean, I had somebody come work for me. I was talking to her. She racked up 4 years of debt in college, like $80,000 of debt. And I asked her, do you remember? It was like a business marketing degree. Tell me something you learned. Nothing. Nothing. There's no tangible. She just sleptwalked through those 4 years. And unfortunately, that's mostly what you'll find in this world. Now, she's woken up now, and now she's worth a damn. I will tell you that there's going to come a day. You'll get your chance once, twice, 3 times. You don't get it often. Charlie Munger says, rare is the person who gets multiple opportunities. Rare. So you're probably going to only get a few in your life. Defining moments. Maybe a moment where you could have partnered with the next Bill Gates. Or you could have, gotten the break that you've been looking for. You could have changed the world. And people are going to judge you by your worth a damn factor. If you do not stand out to them, if you don't jump out, you ain't going nowhere. Now, obviously, as John Wooden says, everybody has different talent levels. I can't play basketball like Michael Jordan no matter what I do. So Michael Jordan on the basketball court is worth a damn more than I am. The point is not, can you be the next Bill Gates? It's whatever aptitude you were born with, potential. Is it fully maxed out? Fully maxed out. Be honest with yourself. In the last 1 month of your life, have you fully maxed out the worth a damn factor of your physical body? Have you fully maxed out your financial worth a damn 1 to 10? Because let's take finance. If you have in finance, That means you not only are curious about finance, you're not only reading about finance, you're not only asking good questions to smart people and surrounding yourself with people who are financially stable and financially wise, but you're also putting those things into practice in your life. On a 1 to 10 scale, where are you? How about your physical health? 1 to 10, where are you? How about your social life? How about your spiritual and higher purpose? It's hard to be a 10. It's hard to be a 10. But if you listen to this and you start reframing your mind and rewiring the neural networks and how they connect, and you get rid of outer trappings and say, I'm going to be worth the damn. On a 1 to 10 scale, you need to get to an 8. Life starts happening once you hit 8. You don't always have to be a 10. Being a 10, you know, it takes years, decades to go from a 9.5 to a 10. That's the hardest part. Just get to an 8. Your world will be revolutionized at an 8. I've been asked if there was one formula to be a highly successful person, what would that formula be? And I have to defer to maybe the smartest man on the planet now, and certainly one of the best investors and money-making people of all time, Charlie Munger. He is the business partner of Warren Buffett, self-made billionaire, and you know, Bill Gates says he's the smartest person he's ever met. And Charlie Munger says these exact words: the best way to get what you want is to deserve what you want. How could it be otherwise? It's not crazy enough that the world is looking for a lot of undeserving people to reward. If I had to sum up what that means in a couple words, I would just say massive skills. He said, to get what you want, you have to deserve it. And how do you deserve it? You deserve it by being massively skilled at whatever you want. And this isn't just a hypothesis. This is what you see in the world. I give you an example. Everybody wants to be a billionaire, or a lot of people would love to be Bill Gates, you know, have $40, $50 billion. But I was reading an interview about Bill Gates, and it said, he said, from age 20 to age 30, I never took one day off, not even one. He built massive skills, you know, starting at 12. He was into computers, and he was focused, and he built a massive skill set from 12 to 20, and then 20 to 30. He stuck with it more than I ever would have. And he deserves what he got more than I do. That's why he has what he has, and I have what I have. Warren Buffett has this interesting kind of test you can do on yourself. He says, imagine you're back in high school, and you have the ability to choose one other person in the class, and you'll get 10% of all the money they ever earn in life. How would you select what person to bet on in your high school senior class? Would you go by the person who was the best looking, the tallest, the prettiest, the person who got the best grades or had the best parents, best environment? Probably not. You would bet on a set of skills, some of them tangible and set, some of them intangible. You'd probably bet on somebody who was faithful, hardworking, honest, knew how to get along with people, knew how to focus, knew how to delegate, knew how to organize their day, built a lot of skills in a specific industry, was patient enough to stay in that industry for long enough. That's who you would bet on. And who would you bet against? If you had to bet against somebody in your high school senior class, who would you bet against? I mean, I would probably bet against somebody who was lazy, who never could focus, who didn't know what they wanted to do, who made people not like them by being annoying, who blah, 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 spent more than they earned, all these bad set of skills. So what Warren Buffett said, he said his mentor, Benjamin Graham, who's basically the man who invented investing in the stock market or current theories and investing in the stock market, he said Benjamin Graham, my mentor, had a simple rule of life. He would look for people who had what he wanted, and he would mimic them and he would look at people that he didn't like their life, and he would do the opposite. What he was really saying is he would find people who deserved it in life, who had a lot of skills, and he would mimic them. So the long answer short, if you want to be successful, if I want to be successful, we have to deserve it. And there's a couple interesting, you know, sub-caveats to this understanding of being successful. I was reading about Kobe Bryant, the professional basketball player, one of the great basketball players of all time. And obviously, you know, he's 6'6" tall, and he's really athletic. He has a good set of genetics. But so do all the 400 players in the NBA professional, you know, basketball league. So it's not just that this guy's good because he has good genetics, because everyone does. But I was reading about him, and it says he goes to practice like everyone else. He works out like everyone else. And then in addition to that, at the end of practice, he'll shoot 800 shots on his own a day. 800 made shots. It takes him an extra 4 hours. And then I was reading about him that every day, to take care of his body, he takes a 20-minute ice bath, which, you know, is not the most fun thing in the world. And then I was reading about his diet. He hasn't eaten sugar, any candy for like 8 months. And he said, you know, yeah, it takes discipline, but look at the reward. So when you look at a professional basketball player that's one of the greatest of all time, it's like he wasn't born great. He deserved it. There's an interesting book called Bounce, and it's the story of what makes people talented. And it asks the question, is it genetic? Is it how you grew up? Did Mozart, you know, he was great at 5 years old, but is that because he was born that way? And it basically says that's a myth. They said people work at it. Even Mozart, the reason he was amazing at 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 was because he started when he was 1. And he built a set of skills. And I can tell you from my own experience, I have yet ever, even one time, to meet somebody who is highly successful, makes a lot of money, is an A-list actor, whatever you name, the top of the game in the world. I've never met one that I didn't think deserved it, ever. Piano players, they might be, you know, naturally a little bit talented, but they're playing 8-10 hours a day. They're playing, they're practicing their skill. So the answer is, what's the one formula? If you had to have one thing that you took away from everything we're talking about, it would be build massive amounts of skill. And I don't want to read this quote. You know, I wrote down this quote. I keep this in my head. And it says, it's what Charlie Munger says is the basic formula for this deserve it factor. He says, spend each day trying to be a little wiser than you were when you woke up. Discharge your duties faithfully and well. Step by step, you get ahead, but not necessarily in fast spurts. But you build discipline by preparing for fast spurts. Slug it out 1 inch at a time, day by day. At the end of the day, if you live long enough, most people get what they deserve. I'm going to repeat that. At the end of the day, if you live long enough, you will get what you deserve. Let's think of it in a negative, a fat person, someone who's obese, extremely unhealthy. 99 out of 100 times, if you went back through their life, you would see all the things you don't want. You would see somebody that day by day became a little fatter. They discharged their diet a little bit more unfaithfully. And step by step, not necessarily in fast spurts, they got obese. 1 inch at a time, day by day. And guess what? At the end of the day, if those people live long enough, their weight will be what they deserve by what they did. And I don't mean this as an indictment or to make fun of any specific set of people. We all have our problems. But this is a profound thought. And for whatever reason, it's completely lost. People think that the reason they don't have enough money, or that they're not happy in their marriage, or they're not happy, wealthy, wise, fulfilled, because they somehow are missing, you know, maybe they're not visualizing right or one little thing. No. Wherever you are, it's what you deserve. If you look in your bank account, I guarantee you that it's probably the amount of money that you deserve you'll find in there. If you're day by day building a lot of financial skills, day by day executing well, taking the example of wise and smart people, your bank account will go up. And if your bank account is always in trouble, it is because day by day, step by step, you've been going in the wrong direction, and you don't deserve to have money in there. Your salary is probably what you deserve. If you deserve to make $1 million a year, somebody will pay you $1 million a year. But you got to be honest and look at yourself in an unbiased way and go, what do I really deserve? This is kind of like the golden rule. The golden rule says, you know, treat others like you want to be treated. In the same way, we can talk about this for success. The golden rule is be the person that you think deserves whatever you want. If you want $1 million, be the person that you've seen that deserved to have made $1 million. That simple. Think on this a lot. I think on this almost every day. And every day I think I really understand this deserve it principle. And every day I realize that I probably underestimated it the day before. It's a profound thought, and it's the gateway to everything you want in life. Being healthy, wealthy, in love, loved by others, fulfilled in what you do, wealthy in material things and non-material things, healthy in body and mind. It all comes from what you deserve. So whatever area in life you don't like right now, remember, you probably deserve what you have now. And the only way to reverse the trend is to deserve something better. And the only way to deserve it is to have massive skills. If you want to be massively healthy, you need to do, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger used to do 1,000 sit-ups a day. He deserved to be what he was. If you want to have a lot of money, Warren Buffett, by age 12 years old, had read every book in the Omaha, Nebraska library on investing. If you want to be in love, invest in love. If you want people to love you, be somebody that people deserve to love. And if you want to be fulfilled in what you do, spiritually, you know, non-materialistically, deserve it. Now, once you grasp hold of this tremendous opportunity, I want you to move to the next step, which is, okay, I get it. There's this huge opportunity. There's the internet. There's the ability to market to people, have customers around the world. There's no longer the constraints of race, gender. There's no longer discrimination. There's no longer slavery like there used to be, serfdom. We can break free. People like Mark Zuckerberg go from $0 in the bank account to being multi-billionaires before they're even 30 in just a matter of a few years. Okay, you get that. Now the next step. What is going to be the mentality to allow you to take care, to take advantage of this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity? Well, I remember I was with Alan Nation, and he told me one time, he said, you know what an entrepreneur is, Ty? I said, what? He said, an entrepreneur is somebody who sees the world like it is, but then he creates the world in his own image. And he lives that way. And I was like, what does he mean by that? And over time, I realized what he means. It's kind of like those hamster balls, those plastic ones where you take a little hamster, you put it inside the ball, you put it on the floor, and you let it roll around. It's like it's in its own world. It just kind of moves around. It's doing its own thing. Sure, it hits some bumps of the outside world, but it's like moving at its own pace to wherever it wants to go, and it's surrounded by this bubble. Well, that is how you're going to take advantage of this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. The once-in-a-lifetime opportunity will only be taken advantage of by entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs. And what is an entrepreneur? I mean, I can go in the dictionary and describe to you what an entrepreneur is. I mean, it can be someone who takes cash and organizes labor and creates a business. Forget that. That's a boring, economic, dry understanding of entrepreneur. I'm going to tell you what an entrepreneur is. An entrepreneur is anybody who gets a vision and a dream in their mind and starts turning it into reality. Starts taking just the dream and makes it real. Imagine if you had that power. How many of us have all these dreams about, you know, what our body's going to look like, how we're going to work out, look like Arnold Schwarzenegger, or be, you know, six-pack abs, or be lean, no fat, blah, blah, blah. Or how many of us have this dream, like, I'm going to have this Ferrari, I'm going to have this big house, I'm going to be able to help charities, I'm going to help my neighbor, I'm going to have a great husband, a great wife, loving kids. We all have these dreams, right? But think about your life. How good have you been to take the dream and turn it into reality? 1 to 10. Your overall life, where you've dreamed about, because the dreams are always a 10. Most of us dream 10, even if we lie to ourselves. You know, we dream in the shower, we're singing, oh, what would it be like to be on stage like Beyonce, or be a, you know, a singer, have people looking at us. That's a dream. But how many people turn into reality? Not many. Not many of us. So on a 1 to 10, what's your dream to reality ratio? I'd say most people's is under a 5. But the entrepreneur is a master of dreaming and then turning into reality. Now, can an entrepreneur turn any dream into a reality? No, because he shouldn't. See, an entrepreneur also learns what's their destiny. We're going to talk about that more later. But I want to talk specifically not on destiny. We'll talk about that in just another lesson. But an entrepreneur knows what their destiny is. And within the confines, the constraints of their destiny, they have a lot of dreams. And then they have skills that take dreams, and next thing you know, they're working. They're actually there. Somebody dreams about, hey, there's going to be a hamburgers, and I'm going to make a lot of these. And the next thing you know, there's a McDonald's. And the next thing you know, there's McDonald's everywhere. Someone always starts in the head. But you need the mindset of an entrepreneur. You need the mindset, I create the world in the image that I want. So there's this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, the internet. The next question is, how are you going to make this internet connected to everybody in a business? You're going to do it with the mindset of an entrepreneur, which means you're going to start learning how to dream, and then you're going to learn how to the skills to turn dreams into reality. Now, let's just talk practical. Talk about making money. Entrepreneurialism. Let's look at the 20 wealthiest people in the world. If we take out the people who inherited their money, they're all entrepreneurs. There's no employees on there. There's nobody that was an employee of a company, just earning a little salary, and all of a sudden saved up enough money to be a billionaire. None. Not even on the top 100. They're all entrepreneurs. Now, they might have worked in a company. There's a difference between working for a company and in a company. Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer, they worked in Microsoft. They didn't work for it. Microsoft worked for them. So you may work in a company, you may start a company or work with somebody, but you want to be in it as a partner, as someone who has equity shares in this thing. And if you look at the United States and basically all of the Western world, wealth accumulation goes primarily to the entrepreneur. Now, there is an exception. There are a tremendous amount of millionaires who made it just working for a company. They made $150,000 a year. They spent less than they earned. They saved a lot of money. They invested it. They bought a house. They were wise with their money. And the next thing you know, they retired millionaires. There's lots of those. And that may be a path for you if you're listening. But that's going to take 20 to 30 years. The only people who are able to shorten that window. Now, if you're okay with 20 to 30 years, you're a conservative person, and that's what you think is right for you, by all means, I don't look down at it at all. We need employees in companies. But this course is specifically, this system is for those of you that are like, that's not the way I'm going to do it. I want to shorten it. I don't want to go 30 years to get to my goals. I don't want to go 20. Now, you need to balance that with being patient, because patience is required. Don't get me wrong. It's vital. But the whole system of the Western world completely favors the entrepreneur. Take the tax system, the tax structure of the world. If you're an employee and you make $100,000 a year, you're going to pay Social Security tax. You're going to pay state tax. You're going to pay federal taxes. You're going to pay sometimes city tax. So let's say 40% is taken from you. So you make 100 grand, you're left with $60,000. Now let's take an entrepreneur. They start a company. They create $100,000 of revenue. But they use that 100,000, most of it, to grow the company again. So they only are taxed on about 30,000 of it, which means their taxes is like $5,000 or $6,000. So they take 100 grand because they're not employees, and the tax structure favors non-employees, favors entrepreneurs, and they can reinvest almost all the 100,000 again. And they grow it, and they grow it, and they grow it, and then they sell it 5 years later. And guess what? You pay a lower tax rate at that time. And you've been able to use the money instead of giving it to the IRS, the tax guys, you've been able to use it to grow your business. That's a huge advantage. That tax alone, the way that the tax system is, of being able to deduct your expenses and grow your money in effect in a tax-deferred way, and then at the end pay a very small tax, that's a huge secret of the wealthy. And if you're an employee, you can't really legally take advantage of that. You get a W-2, I mean, they're taking the taxes out right away. So you're locking yourself in as an employee to an extra 10 or 15 years of basically working for the government. Now, I don't know about you, but I think the government should get what's theirs. But if there's a way to legally and ethically and above board help the world, pay less tax, and make more money, I'm going to go that route every time. And I hope you will too. So this isn't just some subjective, you know, kind of ethereal idea. Oh, it's great to be an entrepreneur. You create the world in your own image. You get to do what you want, blah, blah, blah. No, it's more than that. It's practical too. It's practical. You can deduct the things that you do that are related to the business. If you go out to a conference to learn about your skill, about your company, you can deduct that from what you have to pay on taxes. Now, again, you're going to have to pay some taxes. You got to do what's right. You don't want to get in trouble with the IRS. But the point here is the whole structure of the Western world is on your side when you adopt the mentality of an entrepreneur. So we're going to start learning step by step how to cut the wealth accumulation phase from 20 to 50 years, like it takes most people. How to cut those years down. How to figure out where your destiny is. How to turn that destiny and passion into skills. How to share those skills with the world using the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity of the internet. And then ultimately profit by it. Grow a business. And then exit the business at some point. Maybe never. Maybe you want to retire. Maybe you don't. Depends how passionate you are about what you do. And have a lot of money or enough money, depending on how big your goals are. This is a dream. I'm excited to share this with you. Right now, there is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. No, I mean even better than once-in-a-lifetime. I'm talking about an opportunity that may never have been in front of any other human being for the last 10,000 years of civilization. What is it? Well, let me ask you this question. What other time in history has a person under 25 years old ever been able to be one of the wealthiest people in history? And I'm not including people who inherited their money or were, you know, the king's son or something, you know, royalty. I'm talking about everyday ordinary person who went from $0 in their bank account to $26 billion. That's Mark Zuckerberg, who started Facebook. This is somebody under 30 years old. When has there ever been a time in history where a company has gone from zero and in 1 or 2 years been a multi-billion dollar company founded by just everyday ordinary people? That's the story of Instagram. That's the story of Groupon. So when is a better time to have been born to take advantage of the opportunities of being nothing and going to something amazing financially? Never is the answer. Never. Because the world no longer cares where you live. They don't care what socioeconomic group you grew up in. They don't care if you have a college degree. They don't care what your last name is. They don't care what the color of your skin is. They don't care even about your age or your inexperience. No. The combination of factors that are in front of you and I right now are, number one, the internet. The internet has almost become a cliche. People are, oh, the internet, oh yeah, this is, you know, like it's past or something, the opportunity. The internet, in 100 years, we will look back, and in this year, we'll remember that we were just getting started in the internet. I mean, 5, 6, 7 years ago, most people didn't even have an email address. 10 years ago, I didn't. 11 years ago, I didn't. So, the internet's new, number one. Number two, it's pervasive, meaning it's getting its way into every area of our life. TV's going to be using the internet. Your phone is now completely using the internet. Your GPS in your car is using the internet. Government is using the internet. Your company is using the internet. Your house is going to be powered by the internet. Now, what's amazing about that? Well, you could be a poor kid in the middle of a village in Bangladesh. If you got one internet connection, all of a sudden you can be selling something to not just other people in Bangladesh, but to anybody else who's connected. Now, I know this sounds elementary, but wait, stop for a second. In the 1830s, 70% of the world was still occupied doing what? Growing food. Farming. That means you were pretty much locked in. If you were a farmer, a son of a farmer, you were going to be a farmer. Even if you had the skill to rise out of it, the world wouldn't even let you. There was class structure and, you know, racism and bigotry, all this. I mean, now you could be a woman. No one cares. I just was reading about the woman who started Spanx. I mean, under 40 years old, became a billionaire, never borrowed any money, started a company. She owns the company 100% herself. Name a time this could have ever happened in history where a woman under 40 with no money behind her becomes a billionaire while she's still young. Never. Not even close. I'm reading a history of the Middle Ages. I mean, for thousands of years, you were low. If you were a serf, you were nothing. You were a slave. I just saw the movie Django. I mean, slavery. And now, we not only have eradicated slavery, but I'm telling you this. I don't care. You know, I'm a mixed race person. I'm half white, half Spanish. Nobody's really racist anymore. And look, I've experienced racism. I grew up in the South, but guess what? Now with the internet, people don't even really know who you are. You could be selling to the Ku Klux Klan. Nobody cares. They just want what you're selling them. That's it. So now the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity is that you, listening to this, have the ability to throw off whatever burdens have burdened and held people down for thousands of years. Race, location, education, last name, skin color, gender, sexuality, nobody cares. And now you can connect your business into literally billions of people's lives and sell what you're good at. And you can sell, now people aren't even just using the internet, obviously on their computer, they're keeping it in their hand. They're walking around. You're connected to billions of people. So all you have to do in this once-a-lifetime opportunity is create something that people want. Not all billion. You know, one of my mentors, Alan Nation, told me, he said, Ty, the beauty of the modern world is no matter what crazy idea you have, you can find a million people who are interested in that one thing. There's 7 billion people on the planet and rapidly growing to 10. No matter what you're into, you can probably get a million people who will follow your interest. And that's your market. And they're carrying around in their hand, on their phone, on their laptop, all day long, something that you can connect with them. So here's the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I'm going to make it simple. You create a skill. You take your interest. You turn that into a skill. Let's say you like cooking. Well, you become passionate about cooking. You build massive skills as a cook, understanding food. You then have a lot of venues you could go, channels you could go. You could sell a cookbook. You could sell video classes online on how to cook. You could sell a course like this one. You could patent a product that people use to cook better. You could get your own TV show. You could make webisodes. And every one of these can be turned into money. Because if you're passionate about it, you can then be skilled. If it's your destiny, see, destiny creates passion because our brain is good. Our brain knows, for example, me, when I was young, I had a lot of passion about being a professional basketball player, but I wasn't good enough. And my mind knew it. So when other opportunities came, I moved into those. My destiny was something else. Even though I had multiple passions, my destiny, the subconscious of our brain, is highly logical. It moves us into that place. If we let it, where we have passion, passion turns into devotion. Devotion turns into skill. Skill turns into the ability to share your skill. And sharing your skill turns into money. That's what it does. Go back to Mark Zuckerberg. He had this idea. He wanted to connect people to each other. He felt it was his destiny. Destiny led to passion. Passion led to skill because he focused on it. And then guess what? He started to share that skill. He had built a skill in creating a website where people could connect to each other. And he started to share that. He was passionate about it, skilled in it. He began to share it, and people began to value it and use it. And the next thing you know, you go from a regular kid, drops out of college, worth, at one point I read, you know, about $26 billion in his 20s. Let me tell you what that means to be in your 20s and have that much money. This is I'm going to blow your mind. If you adjust for age, you know, Warren Buffett has like $40 billion, but he's almost 90 years old. Bill Gates has, you know, $40 plus billion, and he's in his 60s. So what does it mean to be in your 20s and have that much money? Because you got all those more years to use your money and invest it and let it grow. Well, if you could take $26 billion in your 20s, like Mark Zuckerberg was worth, and grow that at 7% annually compounded, you're worth $1.4 trillion. That means the age-adjusted net worth of Mark Zuckerberg is in the trillions of dollars. If you age-adjust, over $1 trillion, one kid? Well, the American GDP is like $15 trillion. He's a 15th of it. Now, obviously, you know, he doesn't have all that $1 trillion in his hand, but you see where I'm going with this. The opportunity is so big that you and I, thank God, we don't even have to be as smart as Mark Zuckerberg. You know, I don't have to be as skilled. I don't need $1 trillion to be happy. I hope you don't need $1 trillion. You don't. You and I, we just need what we need for our passions, For some of us, it's $100,000 a year. For some of us, it's, you know, there's a good talk, a TED talk where some scientists did research and they found in the modern world, in America, in the Western world, Western Europe, you need about $75,000, $85,000 to be happy. Below that, you will have levels of unhappiness. So that's it. You make $100,000 a year. I remember when I first started out, I figured out my first year as an entrepreneur, I figured out how to make it's funny, I think I made exactly like $72,000. Now this is, you know, a while ago, but I was like, wow. And I was happy. Man, that was enough money. I could go on any trip I want. I could do anything I want. I could take a girl out on a date. I had the place I wanted, the car I wanted. I mean, I didn't have a Ferrari then, but I was happy. So whatever your destiny is, what I'm saying, this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity is, there is a time now where nothing's holding you back. Don't listen to the lies. Anyone tries to tell you, oh, the economy's bad, is an idiot. The economy's bad for who? This economy always is bad for somebody. I'm saying it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to tap into the internet. I don't care if you want to start a restaurant. You're still going to need the internet. Because it's not the internet, it's a connected tunnel where you could take your restaurant and connect with people almost for no cost, very little cost. There's ways you can build loyal fan bases, whether you have a restaurant or a website. I'm not even talking about the internet just for people who want a website business. I'm talking about any business. Now, why do I say it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity? I do not believe that this will last forever. Why? Well, like anything, a tremendous amount of people are going to start taking advantage of this. Just wait for the next 10 years. When all these kids who are 10 years old growing up using the iPhone and iPad, when these kids get older, they're going to blow by you and I with their understanding of how to use technology. It's going to be a lot more competition. It's going to be a lot harder to get people's attention because there'll be a lot of smarter people. So I see a window of anywhere from 2 to 5 years where you can really get in. And that's what I'm saying. Do it right now. I mean, look back in history. I was reading, you know, about the Rockefellers. I was reading these, let's just take the steel barons. Some of these guys who started steel in the early 1900s. They made incredible amounts of money. But eventually, like right now, it's not so easy to make money in the steel business. It's just a commodity. I mean, let's look back at the history of almost any industry, another big industry, real estate. I mean, even recently, 30, 40 years ago, some of my business partners made tremendous amount of money in real estate. And you can still make money in real estate. You can still make it. But it's not as easy as it used to be. You got to look harder, dig harder, work harder. Jerry Buss, the owner of the Lakers, he started out, I think, either $7,000 or $10,000. And in a matter of 10, 15 years, he grew that into having enough money to buy the Los Angeles Lakers and land. And, you know, he's a guy worth $100 million from $10,000. That was just buying real estate. He used to fix them up himself, patch them up. It's harder to do that now. You got to look for the next opportunity. And the next opportunity is your passion combined with the internet. One thing one of my mentors told me, he said the beauty of doing something that you have a lot of passion and that you have a lot of destiny around is that it's very hard to copy you. Because for whatever reason, passions and destiny are uniquely given to people. Every one of us has a slightly different life upbringing that gives us a slight different passion. We have a different set of natural skills, intellect, creativity, and that forms into this kind of destiny that brings us to this passion, and that's unique. So as you foster that, and as this course teaches you how to do that and turn this into money, you need the internet. And you need to be in it at a time when it's easy. A lot easier. It's easy still. Trust me. I made a lot of money on the internet. And every business I've ever started on the internet, every year gets a little bit harder because people start doing something similar. I still can make money online. I think the internet, people will be making money on the internet for the next 1,000 years. But I'm telling you, right now is a chance to buy cheap, to get in early. I live in Los Angeles. I live in Beverly Hills, Hollywood Hills area. And I was talking to some people. There's a county next to Los Angeles called Orange County. And at one time, the Orange County was owned by the Irvine family. One family owned the whole county. You could have gone and bought 10 acres from that Irvine family for nothing. For nothing. But guess what? Not everybody was a trendsetter. Not everybody could look ahead. And boy, did people lose out. Boy, did they lose out. I'll tell you a story about not catching an opportunity. Not too long ago, there was a guy, and he was approached by somebody that wanted to buy a hamburger franchise from these McDonald brothers. Nobody had ever heard of them, the McDonald brothers. And he needed some money to buy a franchise. He went to his brother and he said, "Let me borrow just a little bit of money, and I'm going to buy this hamburger franchise from the McDonald brothers." And his brother-in-law, I think it was his brother-in-law, looked at him and said, "Who wants to have hamburgers? Nobody's interested in eating hamburgers." So he never got the money. He didn't do the deal. And then another guy came after him, Ray A. Kroc, and he did it instead. And at one point, guess who was the richest man in the United States? Ray A. Kroc. Because he saw an opportunity before. So pay attention. Stay tuned as we teach you this. I'm giving you access to the once-in-a-life opportunity. And it's even better than ever. I'm going to add this one last little piece. If you noticed, I said, now not only have the internet to connect and have your business in everybody's hands, your money-making machine, you got, in effect, you turn everybody's cell phone in the world and everybody's computer and laptop and iPad into a potential ATM for you. You're going to put something in and you're going to take money out. They're going to put something in, you're going to take the money out. But I'm going to add one thing that I think is even more interesting, because life isn't all about making money. What's more interesting to me, the money is like a plus. But what's more interesting is this is the first time in history you could get paid for whatever your passion is. You could not always do that. Like I said, 1830, 70% of people were farmers. You had to be farmers. The world needed that many farmers because there wasn't the efficiencies of scale that we have now in agriculture. So you were locked in. And if you wanted to be a painter and your dad was a farmer, you were stuck. Now, you could make a lot of money, but how many people? I remember my dentist when I was young in North Carolina. I was getting my teeth done, and I was laid back in his chair, and I look up on the ceiling, and there was paintings up there. And I was like, "Wow, those are cool paintings. Who did those?" And he goes, "Oh, I did those." And I was like, "Really? And you're a dentist?" And he said, "Yeah, I always wanted to be a painter. That was my true passion, my true love. But my dad said there's no money in it, so you need to just become a dentist." Now, I'm not going to argue whether that was a good or bad decision and good or bad advice from his father, but I will say this. We now have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity where if your passion is art, there's a way you can make money. Not just as an artist. You might share a course on how to learn to draw that you create. You might have a blog. You might have expert advice. You might have travel art webisodes. There's so many ways. You create a following of people who are passionate. 1 million people in this world, which is nothing. Now, it doesn't mean all 1 million people are your clients, but that's your base of people to get customers from. I don't care what. And that dentist of mine, I always thought of that. I was like, man, I don't want to have to make that choice between being a dentist and doing my destiny of painting. Maybe there's a way to do both. And now, when this guy was young, it was the 60s and 70s. This is an older guy. He didn't have a choice. He was locked in because there wasn't a way to easily market your passion to the world, your destiny passion to the world. His destiny, his passion was art, and he couldn't figure out a way to make money. So he had to go down another route that he may not like. And every day he's sitting there and he's, you know, operating on people's mouths and cleaning their teeth. And I just wonder, how often does that guy go, "Wow, I wish I could just have made my money in art"? So for you, If you're listening to this, I told you, it's not just one opportunity, it's two. The first is the internet will allow you to have clients everywhere. It will also allow you to live anywhere in the world. It will allow you to wake up whenever you want, because the internet, once you automate it, it goes on its own. It will allow, it doesn't matter if you're in 9 to 5. You don't have to go in traffic. If you want to take a trip to London and go sightseeing, you, as long as you have your computer with you, you can keep working. It frees you up. You can go see your kid's baseball game. You can pick your kids up. You're not locked into a boss. That's what the internet does. And it gives you clients around the world. On top of that, it allows you to have your passion turned into your life, turned into your business. But remember, this does not last forever. Pay attention to what we're sharing with you in this system. This system is going to show you step by step how to change your mind, how to change your actions, and how to start turning your passions into a business that sustains you, makes you money, fulfills you, keeps you healthy, keeps you connected to other humans. That's the goal of this system. That's the goal of my life. So that you solve the four hard problems. You solve physical health. You solve the problem of how you're going to make your money. You solve the problem of how to be connected socially with friends, family, and romance. And you create a higher purpose for yourself, which is to leave civilization better because you are alive. On your path to success, both financially and in business and beyond in life, you're going to have to be productive. I get asked all the time, what's the keys to being productive? Well, a great book on this is Managing Oneself by Peter Drucker, the great business guru. And I highly recommend you read that book. It's 50, 60 pages, very short. And at the opening, he says, you know, what made Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, Mozart, Bach, what makes these people stand out from the masses of people who come and go and don't leave their mark on the world? And he says they knew how to manage themselves. So productivity is important. So what is the biggest key to productivity? I think there are several. And in this talk, I want to talk specifically on what I call chores and progress. And I learned this from my first mentor, Joel Salatin. And we were on a farm, and he said, you know, Ty, you got to divide your life up. You have to divide it up between maintenance, which on a farm you call chores, and progress, which in the modern business world I call creating cash flow, right? So you got to make money, but at the same time you have to maintain what you have. So on a farm, back then, he had a beef and cattle farm, and I was from the city, and I came, and I spent time, a couple years on that farm, and every morning, you'd wake up, 5:30 in the morning, before sun came up, it was still dark, and the first thing you would do was take care of basic chores. That was maintenance. That was keeping things alive, okay? I remember my first chores were 5,000 chickens that were out on pasture. Joel Salatin is one of the first guys to create the free-range chicken and grass-fed beef model. So he had all the chickens out. So rain or shine, I'd wake up. I was staying in a little apprentice cottage. It'd be dark. It was in Virginia. Sometimes it'd be rainy. I'd wake up at 4:30 in the morning, 5 in the morning, get up. And there was thousands of chickens, and they were out in these little portable pens so they could eat grass. They didn't have any floors. They were just surrounded to keep predators out, but I would pull them along, and they were super heavy. Now Joel, of course, has figured out how to make them lighter, but I was kind of in his prototype plan. So I'd have, you know, about 60 chicken pens that each weighed, oh, they were like 300-400 pounds, and I'd have to put a little dolly under them and drag them and move them along the grass, and then bring them feed and then bring them water. And it took me about two and a half hours every morning to do my chores. So I'd start at 5, and I generally finish somewhere between 7 and 8. And then I was starving. I remember me and the other apprentice, his name was Geronimo, he's from Mexico. We used to cook 3 dozen eggs, 36 eggs each, not each, in a bowl, and split it in half. So I'd have 18 eggs for breakfast and oatmeal and a couple pieces of toast. We were hungry back then. Now, point being,
And then, of course, after breakfast, we go out and actually do something new, whether it's build new fence or process chickens or gather eggs or sell eggs. And he had a little place people would come to the farm and sell eggs. That is how your business, whether or not you're in a farm or in a high-tech modern world, that's how your business has to be designed. You got to get your maintenance done, your chores done first. Now, remember, when I say first, I don't mean you want to spend all morning, right? But you get them done early. You get those things that maintain, that keep you from losing money. Remember, you're going to have clients. You got to check your emails. The average person right now in the modern world is checking their email 40 times an hour. That's once every minute and a half, all day long. People are losing tremendous productivity by spreading their chores across the whole day. You don't want that. You want a definitive time. Knock it out. Pick your time. I recommend relatively early. I think for those of us who no longer live on a farm and live in the city, the best thing to do is wake up and do your physical chores for your body. So do your cardio, do some weights, do some of that. But once you start your work day, let's say after breakfast, I recommend that you knock out your chores. Here's what I define as chores, and I like to do it. I keep a little piece of paper pinned to my desk so I don't forget. Eventually, it'll become memory, but do this at the beginning. So your chores are checking your emails, checking your voicemail. I like to check my bank account, right? You got to keep score on how you're doing. I check my texts. I check my WhatsApp. I check my Skype. Check my voicemails, all the forms of communication. And if there's anything urgent, I answer it and knock it out right there. Then what I do, and I recommend everybody follow this, I'm going to give you a real formula that I've developed. It really works. So you do that. That should take you approximately 30 minutes. Remember, you're not doing new emails. You're kind of maintaining. This is chores time. This is putting out any fires and so on. So you get that done. Check your bank account. I like to weigh myself physically. I measure my stomach, my waist to make sure I'm not gaining weight. I do all those maintenance things. All right. Then what do I do? Well, I like to include a little bit of reading in the maintenance. So while I'm eating breakfast, I like to pick up a book, a classic book, something that stood the test of time, something that's over 50 years old, and just read. Like the great historian Will Durant said, we spend too much time on the last 24 hours and not enough time on the last 6,000 years. So I like to look back at history so I'm avoiding mistakes that people have made for thousands of years and living a better life. So I do that in my chore period, right? Just reading, like I said. In the morning, I like to do some workout. If you could combine it all where you listen to audio, listen to some books while you're working out, that's great. Eat your breakfast while you're eating, read a classic book. Then I get in there, check my emails, check my bank account, check my Twitter, check my voicemail, all those things, okay? Get those basics done. Now, what's next? Well, at the end of my chores, I compile and I keep a running task list. You can keep it real simple. It can be a Word document. It can be Evernote. It can be whatever you like to keep your task list. I just look at it. I cross off the things I did yesterday, reprioritize. Then what I recommend you do is go into, and we'll talk about this later, a brief business slash meditation. I don't mean that like in a spiritual kind of meditation. I literally mean I either go on a little walk, okay, but I don't bring my phone with me, no electronics, no audiobooks. I just spend about 15 minutes, okay, 15 minutes listening to something. I spend 15 minutes just listening to my own brain, okay? I let my mind wander. I think deeply on different problems. I look at my task list. I bring my task list with me in a pen and paper. That's all I bring with me. Sometimes I like to do it if it's raining outside. I have a little library. I have that room, my library, where purposely I've made it where there's no wireless internet reaches that room. There's no electronics. There's no TV. It's just a little chair, one chair surrounded by books. And I'll go in there and I'll do a little 15 minutes of quote unquote business meditation. Now, how long should all this take you? Well, what Joel Salatin said is chores shouldn't take much more than 2 hours a day, business chores. If you add working out, it might take a little longer, 2 or 3 hours. The rest of your day must be devoted to progress, which means creating and making cash flow. You don't make a business with cash flow, you will be out of business. Some of you have heard my mentor tip that I have talk about cash is cash, right? People go, oh, time is money. No, only money is money. Only cash is cash. Can't pay your bills with a flurry of activity. Most entrepreneurs create tons of activity, checklists and this, and they're doing that, but they're not creating cash flow. That's because they're not understanding what I'm telling you now. This simple lesson can make you a lot of money, bring you a lot of success. So again, I do those 2 hours, and I end my chores with that meditation time. It's not a spiritual meditation. I'm not breathing in or doing anything like that. I'm literally just letting my mind wander. I'm trying to think deeply, multiple steps deep, right? I'm like, well, I need to call this person today. That's on my task list. But if I call them, what if they're not, you know, what if they're not interested? What if they're busy? What am I going to do next? What if it doesn't work out? I'm thinking deeply. It's like a chess game in my mind. Thinking, 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 thinking. That's what you must do during that. And it doesn't need to be long. 15 minutes is perfect. So it's a quick rock around the block with no electronics, ending your chore period, or it's sitting on a chair. I like the chair one sometimes, and I like the walk, just whatever my mood is. You can switch it up, okay? Some of you, I know, entrepreneurs don't get out and get fresh air. I'm a big believer in fresh air. Do not sit in an office. I don't even sit in an office. I converted my gym, my garage, into a gym/office. So I open the doors and get fresh air, and I walk around my gym. Not a big believer in sitting much. I sit when I write. I sit on a bouncy ball. That bouncy ball, it's not so hard on your body. We're not evolved to sit. Doctors say even 2 hours of working out in a gym won't offset 6 hours or 8 hours sitting. So I'm not a big believer in sitting. I have a headset. If I need to call people, I call. I get on the phone, and I put my headset on, and I walk around and call. But I make sure I knock out my chores. Remember, again, just to review, what is in those chores? You need to be checking your bank account. Don't let that sneak up on you. Check in your emails. Don't miss emails. You know, you don't have to answer everyone, but check the urgent ones. You don't have to even reply to them all. If they're going to take a long time to reply to an email, then that goes on your task list to do during your progress time of the day. Okay? If you find yourself doing too much chores, Joel Salatin said, you will lose interest in your business. So if I start getting my chores taking me 3, 4, 5, 6 hours a day, I know I maybe need to hire an assistant or cut things out of my life. I'm making my life too complicated. Sometimes it's best to say, I don't do that anymore. It's not profitable enough. I'm cutting it out to cut my chores down. The ratio should be like 1 to 3. For every 3 hours of progress making cash flow, you're only doing 1 hour of chores. So in a day, an 8 hour day, let's say, that's about 2 hours of chores and 6 hours of progress. Okay. So once I finish that business meditation, I do my walk or I sit in my chair. I look at my task list, I get that task list, and I circle 1 or 2 or 3 things I'm going to do that day. At least one thing to focus on that's going to make cash flow. You must, like Gary Keller says in the book, The One Thing, you must embrace chaos to be successful. Meaning you're going to have to let some things slip by the wayside. Don't go crazy on making sure every little chore thing is perfect in your business and neglect the core thing of business, which is you must create revenue. Must have cash. And the quicker that cash flow comes in, it needs to be daily cash flow. Weekly, I don't even like weekly. I like every day. I don't like any business where I got to go even one day without cash flow. I like to see it. That way nothing sneaks up on you and the bills don't sneak up on you, right? Making money. But that takes the progress period of time. That's when you go out. You build new things. You do new marketing. You make sales phone calls. You build sales campaigns. You optimize your sales funnel. Anything directly related to money, making it, that's the progress period. Remember, paying a bill is not making money, so that goes into chores. And if you can't finish it and it's a Monday, let it spill over to Tuesday. As long as you stay consistent, things won't sneak up on you, and it'll be okay to let it spill over into the next day. So let's say you got a bill to pay. Don't wait till the last minute. Let's say you stay a month ahead of time. So if it's Monday, let that spill over to Tuesday. Use a timer. Don't spend much more than 2 hours. Now, if you're going to include your reading in your chores, which I like to do, sometimes then it might get into 3 hours a day, right? Because it's not, you don't want to spend 3 hours answering emails. If you're doing that, something else is wrong in your business. So again, what do I do then in my progress? Because I gave the recap and the summary of what I do in chores. We'll go over that one more time before we end this, because I like to say this a few times to get into people's head. Okay, if I repeat myself, it's because I found that that works the best for people to really learn this. this isn't about hearing myself talk. This is about you getting a benefit. So I want to make sure that you get it. So progress. What does my progress look like? Well, I got my checklist and I'm very focused. What's one or two things that I'm going to do that day? One main thing that's going to be a domino effect to bring cash flow to the business. What do I need to do? Oftentimes that's phone calls. One of my first mentors, Mike Steinbeck, said, if you're afraid of that phone, you're going to be poor. You can't be afraid of the phone. You got to be able to get on the phone and make some calls. You don't just hide behind email. Email is a very horrible way to make money. I only use email to document things. I hate email. I feel that people will be meaner, reject you more. Get people on the phone. Get them on Skype. Get them on headset. Get them on get them on the line. In person's even better. So during that 6 hours of progress, I'm out interacting with people. Interacting, if you're selling things, you must interact with people. I'm interacting with my employees during that 6 hours, but I'm careful not to be doing it in a chores maintenance. I do my chores maintenance if I need to meet with them in those first 2 or 3 hours, okay? And then I do my progress. Now, some people ask, well, I need to check my email more than once a day. You do. So what you could do is instead of doing all 2 or 3 hours of chores in the morning, you could do an hour and a half of them in the morning and an hour and a half of them towards the later part of the day. That way you could check your email. You don't really need to check email more than and text and WhatsApp and all that more than twice, maybe three times a day if you're expecting something urgent. Don't become like the average American, check their email 40 times an hour. It's literally costing the U.S. and global economy billions of dollars because people are looking down at their phone and texting emails. I like to turn my phone off, check it, you know, once every hour or two, make sure there's nothing. But then if there's nothing urgent, I just move on. Keep focused on progress, progress, progress. You can't just maintain. And that's what so many people do, especially once they make a little money in business. Then they just focus on chores and maintenance. Continue to go out and make progress. Remember, the world has inflation. What does inflation mean? It means the value of a dollar is always going down. And it's interesting, if you look at the philosophy of money, people that are academics that study money, one of the things they say is, if there wasn't inflation in the world, you wouldn't have to grow and invest. You could just take your money and live off the interest. But the problem is, the interest, the value of it, the interest of, let's say you made $1 million, and let's say that spins off $50,000 a year for a lifetime. Well, the problem is, in 10 years, 50 grand is not going to be worth very much. So because we have inflation, and inflation is probably not going to go away anytime soon, the value of a dollar is continually going down, the dollar of a pound, wherever you live, yen, wherever you are in the world listening to this, the value of your money is always going down. So you must always be growing just to break even, just to tread water. So that progress part, so many people in their productivity is completely out of whack. It's, you know, 6 hours doing maintenance stuff. It can't be that long. You can't, if you start finding yourself, you know, once in a while, there will be just a kind of a abnormal day where I just, you know, once every 2 weeks where I just spend the whole day on maintenance with some unexpected fire. That's unexpected. Maybe once a week at maximum. But then I try to make up for it the next day with more progress. Progress, progress, progress. Okay? Now, a few little PSs to this. In terms of reading, I like to think of reading in the same way of chores and progress. So like I said, during my chores, I read some old classic books, right? During breakfast, 10, 15 minutes. But during the day for progress, I will block out some time to read a new business book that's going to teach me a skill. I like to do that a little bit every day. That goes into progress. I read a book on, you know, being better at marketing, better at copywriting, better at managing employees, better at, you know, raising capital, best investing money, all those practical things. I like to do that reading later in the day during my progress period. The morning or whenever I do my chores, I like to read a maintenance book. Now, what do I mean by maintenance book? Well, when I'm reading a classic book, like I like to read Freud or Darwin, I have the Yale series or even a little Shakespeare. All this classic stuff, why? I see it as a soap. The world is full of dumb ideas now. There's so many YouTube videos and things. If you're not careful, you'll kind of be dumb. So what I like to do is something very simple. In the morning, I see it kind of like soap, right? So by reading a classic book, I'm kind of cleaning my mind from all the dumb images that I may have read the last, I mean, or I may have inadvertently seen and listened to at Lady Gaga and, you know, whatever stupid TV I was watching. So, again, chores in the morning. What do those include? Just as a quick recap, those include checking your email, doing a little cardio. Again, I like to even do that before breakfast. So let me just say, you need this also for your body. So let me start over and not talk about that, because that's a whole nother conversation. I don't want to get too confusing. I do my workout before breakfast, okay? Most of it. I might do it some a little bit later. So then you eat breakfast. While I'm eating breakfast, I begin chores. What do? I begin to read a classic book while I'm eating. That's part of chores. Then I check my emails, I check my text, I check my voicemail, I do all those basic things. I check my WhatsApp, I check my Skype, I check what my programmers did, I check up a little bit on my employees, any memos, just looking for urgency. Then, what's the next thing that I do? Well, I've done my reading, I've done that. I compile a little task list. It's the one, I had the task list from the day before, so I'm like constantly compiling this and reordering and crossing off the things from the day before. So then I take that list and I end my chore period in the morning by just either going on a walk or sitting down in a chair and just thinking deeply. I call it business meditation. Doesn't need to be more than 10 or 15 minutes. I'm just thinking about what I need to do. And I like to think about this. This is counterintuitive. What could go wrong today? If I got to make this call today, what could be wrong about it? Because like Charlie Munger, the billionaire, says, I've spent my whole life preparing for the worst. And it's made me happier and wealthier than if I try to be, you know, positive. That's what Munger said. So you could still be a optimist and plan for the worst. That's what you do in that business meditation. You don't only need to think about that. I think of creative ideas. I just let my mind wander. But once my mind latches onto something, I kind of focus down. Okay. I also like to do that in the shower also. It's a great other time to do some business. I do a lot of business meditation in the shower. Water somehow is a catalyst. But I also like to do it in my chair. Or if it's nice out, I go for a little walk. No electronics with you, just a piece of paper and your brain. That's business meditation. Then I go out of that. I've gotten my reading in. I've got my basics done. I put out any little fires. I've compiled my task list. I've thought about it. Boom. Day starts. Cash flow. Progress time. What's going to be the one thing I need to accomplish today that's going to create growth? World's inflationary. I must always create growth. I must always move forward. I must always do new things and grow my business. This will keep you happy and excited about life. Don't let that ratio, like Joel Salatin said, don't end up 6-8 hours doing chores and 1 or 2 hours focused on cash flow. It will destroy your business. Occasionally it will happen, but it cannot be a consistent habit. All right, so the question I have for you is, looking back over the last 6, 12 months, 2 years, 5 years, what ratio have you maintained between chores and progress? Some of you, okay, have been doing too much chores. And some of you haven't been doing enough chores. I worked with one lady. She never checked her email, never checked her bank account, never paid her bills on time. She was always on the new business stuff. Guess what? You'll go broke that way too. You got to have a balance. So answer here in the question below, and let's get some comments going. What has your ratio been over the last 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, 24 months? What's your habit, and what do you need to fix about it? And how are you going to do it? Go ahead, leave a nice comment. That will close out this lesson, and that will be something for you to look back on over time, okay? Thank you. I hope this has been helpful. I know it has helped me, and I learned it from somebody very wise, and I believe it will be very helpful for you in your life in all areas, health, wealth, love, and your overall happiness. So let me know. I'm excited to hear your comment, and talk to you soon.